Thank you so much for joining us today. You're listening to Corrieton Cast, the official podcast of Corrieton Church. What does real romantic love look like according to the Word of God? You're listening to Dr. Rocky Ramsey's message on romantic love in a series on relationships. How does romantic love begin and grow, and how does it last? If you're in search for real love, this message is for you.
The Song of Solomon, sometimes called the Song of Songs, is a romance novel written in poetic language. It was written about 30 years before the book of Ecclesiastes. I'll tell you at the end of the message why that's significant. Romantic love is all around us. We have television channels that are devoted to it, television series that are devoted to it, movies. There's almost no movie you'll see that there's not some kind of romantic relationship in it. I'm beginning in your outline by defining what we're looking for. What we're looking for. Number one, we're looking for love. We're looking for love. Whatever on earth that is. Some think love is a chemical reaction. It's a dopamine hit. It's a really great feeling I get when I see someone or am around someone. An old 70s song said, "Do you want somebody to love? Don't you need somebody to love?" Well, apparently we do. God describes real love as two people being joined together, literally glued together, so that they become one. Look at Genesis 2:24. A man shall be joined to his wife, and they shall become one. We might settle for a dopamine hit or a series of emotional feel-goods, but what we're looking for and longing for is more than that. We long for someone to know us and still want us. We're looking for somebody committed to us, not just somebody we feel something towards. Number two, we're looking for lifelong love. We're not looking for love for the weekend. We're not looking for love for the next few months or the next few years. What we're really looking for is lifelong love. Matthew 19:6, Jesus said, "What God's joined together, let no man separate." What we really want is someone to know us and want us for a lifetime. Somebody who'll always be there for us, in richer or poorer, in sickness, in health, until death do us part. Listen closely to what I'm about to say. People who don't want a lifelong love are just afraid they'll never achieve it or be able to maintain it. It's emotionally easier to tell ourselves that we don't want something than it is to want it and not have it. I'll say that again. It's emotionally easier to tell ourselves, "I don't need love, I don't need anybody else," than it is to want it and not have it. And so that's what damaged people do. They say, "I don't need anybody, I don't need love, I don't need any help." What they're doing is they're demonstrating that they desperately want those things. They don't think they can obtain them. It's a lot easier to pretend you don't want them than to want them and not be able to get them. The greatest acts of love are when a husband or wife faithfully takes care of a sick or dying spouse. That's what real love looks like, not two people wanting to jump into a bed together. Listen to the words of a song you might have heard at a wedding, but probably did not know that it was written by John Lennon. "Grow old along with me. The best is yet to be. When our time has come, we will be as one. God bless our love. God bless our love. Grow old along with me. Two branches of one tree. Face the setting sun when the day is done. God bless our love. God bless our love. Spending our lives together, man and wife together. World without end, world without end. Grow old along with me. Whatever fate decrees, we will see it through, for our love is true. God bless our love. God bless our love." Those of you who recognize that beautiful song are singing it in your heads while I'm reading it. That's what our hearts long for, that kind of love. We're looking for a lifelong love, romantic love. How does it start? How does it grow? How does it work? First, how romantic love begins. Romantic love begins with something that looks and feels like real love, but it isn't. Looks like it, feels like it, it's not it. It begins with infatuation. I'm going to define infatuation for you. Infatuation is a strong and often foolish and unreasonable attraction to another person. Say it again. Infatuation is a strong and often foolish and unreasonable attraction to another person. In other words, you can be infatuated with and attracted to a terrible person. All kinds of people are. There's all kinds of men in prison who have these women outside of prison writing to them, wanting to be with them when they get out. Go figure. Why do they do that? It's infatuation. Love, on the other hand, is a deep affection for a person, not a powerful attraction. It's a deep affection, not a powerful attraction. Infatuation can be blind as a bat. Love is never blind. If you marry somebody based upon infatuation, marriage will be a real eye-opener for you. Now, two things about infatuation. Number one, infatuation gets ignited. Infatuation gets ignited. Something chemical in our brain takes place, and it feels great. So Solomon said the woman he had met, Song of Solomon 4:9, "You have made my heart beat faster with a single glance." There is no real love at first sight. There's attraction at first sight. There can be infatuation at first sight. But love is based on knowledge and experience, not just hormones. Love at first sight happens all the time in the pretend world of movies, television, music, and poetry. The Doors' Jim Morrison sang, "Hello, I love you. Won't you tell me your name?" The Beatles sang, "I've just seen the face. I can't forget the time or place. She's just the girl for me." Dean Martin, in one of his movies, I think it was called The Silencers, he's there's this wall, and out from behind this wall comes this real beautiful leg. And so he sings, "Let me call you sweetheart, I'm in love with you. Haven't seen your face yet, but your legs will do." Sparks, chemistry, dopamine, feelings, infatuation. It's not love. Infatuation. You'd better know the difference. Most people don't. Neil Diamond wrote a hit song for the Monkees that some of you will remember that the donkey sang at the end of Shrek. "I thought love was only true in fairy tales, meant for someone else but not for me. Love was out to get me. That's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer, not a trace of doubt in my mind." There's an idiot. "I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried." Sparks, chemistry, dopamine, feeling, infatuation has nothing to do with love. In the Song of Solomon, let's wait before I get there. We might like the idea of those songs, but they're not real love. But it is how romantic love starts. I saw Betsy, I was attracted to her. On our first date, I was infatuated with her. 9 days later, I was engaged to her. 9 months later, I was married to her. 44 and a half years later, I'm still married to her. And watch this, love her far more than I ever had before. Love grows, infatuation leaks. Number two, infatuation gets ignited. Then number two, imagination gets launched. It gets launched. So we begin to think about, literally fantasize about that person. We only know what we're attracted to, Dean Martin, that girl's leg. So every thought we have about that person may be painting them far better than they really are. What we feel at this moment is based, watch this, more upon what we don't know about him than what we do. That's what infatuation's like. You're all goo-goo about somebody because you don't really know them yet. It's not based on your knowledge of who they are. It's based upon your ignorance of who they are. This girl's attracted to a king. That's a lot to get excited about, isn't it? So she launches into this avalanche of fantasy. Song of Solomon 5:13. His cheeks are like a bed of balsam. His lips are like lilies dripping with liquid myrrh. That probably doesn't mean he drools, okay? Verse 14, his abdomen is carved ivory. He says in another place that her belly is a heap of wheat, but that's another story. True story, read it. Verse 16, she says, he is wholly desirable. That's infatuation. The only person wholly desirable is Jesus. This girl's living in la-la land. Infatuation leads to imagination. If you know the story, David's life fell apart after his affair with Bathsheba. He had a son named Amnon who was totally infatuated with his half-sister, David's daughter by another wife named Tamar. Tamar had a full brother named Absalom. Amnon was lovesick. You find this in 2 Samuel 13, verses 1 to 19. I put verses 1 and 2 in your outline. Absalom, the son of David, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. I put loved in quotation marks, which means it's not real love. Verse 2, Amnon was so frustrated because of his sister Tamar that he made himself ill. Amnon was lovesick. He was all shook up. Amnon wanted Tamar, but he couldn't have her, so he took her. Verse 13, 14 and 15. Amnon was stronger than Tamar. He violated her and lay with her. Then, watch this. Then Amnon hated her with a very great hatred. For the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he had loved her. Isn't that interesting? A lot of infatuated people have wanted somebody they would do anything to get, only to later not want to be with that person at all. They go from, I can't live if living is without you, to hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more. Country music singer Tammy Wynette sang, Stand By Your Man. She later sang D-I-V-O-R-C-E, if you remember. Amnon didn't love Tamar. He was infatuated with her. He had taken an arrow from Stupid Cupid, another song. It was likely her resistance and then his guilt that led to him hating her more than he had originally been infatuated with her. Listen closely. Young people, unmarried people, you ought to be hanging on everything I say this morning. You ought to be hanging on every word that comes out of my mouth this morning. Listen closely. What can start out red hot can end up ice cold. Sadly, it so often does. It's what you do after you, quote, fall in love that counts. Your infatuation eventually no longer counts. It's what you do after you're infatuated that counts. Confession about this story of Amnon, Tamar, and Absalom. My favorite part of the story is later on, Absalom sets up a dinner for all of his brothers, and when they all come in, he kills Amnon. So you can tell people, boy, my preacher, he's really messed up. His favorite part of one of the stories in the Bible is murder. No, it's justice. It's in keeping with the Old Testament law. David heard what happened, and he was upset. He got angry, but he did nothing. He was weakened by his own sin. And so now he was impotent to take care of his son who had raped his half-sister, David's daughter. So, yep, my favorite part is when Absalom took him out, which, if you know, led to the whole story of Absalom eventually fleeing and coming back and trying to take the kingdom and all that. Hear me clearly. Infatuation is a real thing. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a completely inadequate thing. Infatuation is a real thing. It's not necessarily a bad thing. We all are going to have it. Everybody who's married had it with their mate. But it's a completely inadequate thing. Infatuation will begin a relationship, but it cannot finish it. It cannot finish it. So you better be sure that what you feel toward this guy or toward this girl isn't infatuation. Just infatuation. Because if it is, it's not going to last. You're going to become another statistic. And you're going to be a part-time parent of your children. Infatuation will get you through the dating, through the wedding, maybe through another year, but it won't last. Studies have shown that infatuation typically lasts about 2 years. And then after that, you better have love or you have nothing. So romantic love begins with infatuation, but it has to grow. So how does it grow? In your outline, how romantic love grows. Number one, an attempt to win is begun. An attempt to win the other person is begun. So infatuation has been ignited. Imagination is off and running. We see him or her and we want him or her, so the game begins. So he begins to do whatever he thinks he can do to make her want him. And she begins to do whatever she thinks she can do to make him want her. In our day, that usually means jumping into bed with him. We have an example of this in Hosea chapter 2, verse 14. Hosea says, I will allure her, bring her into the wilderness, and speak kindly to her. He'll take her to nice places, tell her sweet things. In the Song of Solomon, 1 to 4, 1 to 7, Solomon says all of those wonderful and romantic things about his woman, all these wonderful things. In chapter 5, verses 10 to 16, she says all these wonderful things about him. During infatuation, both people are on their very best behavior. They're likely to be hiding any flaw that they think might end the relationship or damage it in any way. And they're often pretending to be someone they're not because they can't imagine if you knew who they really were that you would want them. So we wear masks. If you knew me, you wouldn't want me. So I will be somebody I think you want. Girls, listen real closely. Guys will do all kinds of stuff to have you. They'll pretend to the highest heaven. They'll get in church. They'll talk Jesus. They'll do whatever they want. But when they put that ring on their finger, you're going to find out who you married. And it's often not who you thought you were marrying at all. All kinds of people say, you know, I don't even know him. Well, the truth is, you never did. It's like I've never met this woman I've been married to. The truth is, you never have. You met the mask. They do everything they can do to create the desired emotional response thereafter. They're thoughtful. They seek to serve the other partner. They're attempting to win that person. Now, everybody's going to do this. It's not necessarily a bad thing. So when you're infatuated with somebody and then you start having these imaginations about what the future could be with this person, then you're going to do what you can do to try to get them to care and feel the same way about you. That's not necessarily too bad. But what they fail to understand, number two, is that an investigation should be conducted. An investigation should be conducted. In fact, right out in your margin somewhere, dating should be an investigation. That's what it ought to be. It shouldn't be a romance. It ought to be an investigation. Dating should be a eyes wide open investigation, not a blind sprint toward love and marriage. Say it again. Dating should be an eyes wide open investigation, not a blind sprint toward love and marriage. What we have, going back to the first three messages, we are empty cups. We want to be filled. So what do we want? We want love and marriage. We think it'll fill us. So we do whatever we can to get that love and marriage. And we close our eyes to all the things that we ought to be seeing. Your goal in dating is to determine who that other person really is. Is he a good person? Does he love the Lord? And here's a big deal. Does he love the Lord like you love the Lord? When I dated all through college, I met girl after girl that I dated for various amounts of times. And I never felt I dated one who loved the Lord like I did. And the reason I ended the relationships is because I thought they would be as spiritual as I would be. I didn't want somebody whose spiritual life was dependent upon mine. And then when it bit you, it hit the bullseye. When in our marriage, I wrote and sang a song to her. And one of the lines was, I wanted to have the best that there could ever be. I knew that meant a girl who loved Jesus more than she loved me. And that's who I got. Will this guy be a good husband? Is he honest? Is he responsible? Can he take care of you? Will he protect you? Do we have the same priorities? Do we want the same things in life? The New King James translation is better than New American Standard on Amos 3:3. It says, can two walk together unless they are agreed? They can't. We'll talk about that next week, talking about friendship. Two people can't walk together unless they're agreed. If you want a lasting love, there are things you better agree on. You better agree on faith. You better agree on money. You better agree on sex. You better agree on children. In particular, how many you want to have and how you're going to raise them. See, I've married a girl. He really doesn't want kids. She wants 10. Then the girl that wants 10 needs to move on. But I love him. Whenever somebody says, I love somebody, start deducting IQ points. Love's not blind. They don't want the same things. And then you got this one person who's going to raise their kids the right way in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And you got another person, maybe they were abused and they're never going to tell their kid no. Or maybe they just grew up entitled and everything was given to them and that they think that's how you raise kids. You let them do whatever they want to do and get away with whatever they do. Let me tell you, that becomes a real problem. I'll say this, I'll say it again in a minute. Problems in dating don't get fixed by marriage. They get exacerbated. They become greater. That doesn't fix them. Do you want the same things? Infatuation, which we mistake for love, is not enough. So young person, when you start thinking, I love him or I love her, let me tell you, that's not enough. That'll get you divorced. What are his values? Does he love the Lord like I love the Lord? Is he responsible? Will he take care of us? Can I count on him? Does he want the same things? Does he have the same priorities? That'll make it enough. But just love isn't. The Beatles sang a song, All You Need Is Love. Then they broke up. Love is not enough. There has to be agreement. There has to be agreement. You can have a lot of fluffy feelings for someone that you don't agree with and shouldn't be with. It happens to all kinds of people. Here's a girl, she's dating a guy who's hitting her. And she thinks that she loves him. No, she's got some kind of deep, can I say this, deep emotional doo-doo. That's all you'll remember from this message, isn't it? How's this morning's message? Well, Pastor said doo-doo. She's got some deep emotional junk that makes her think, that makes her want somebody who's hurting her. It's not within the same universe as love. It just isn't. Love's not enough. Infatuation has little or no IQ. I see them, I know them a little, I feel something. Has no IQ. This may be a horrible person for me, but I feel all this stuff. And then we enhance the feelings. I'll talk about that in just a moment. Disagreements that you ignore in dating will become big problems in marriage. Don't expect to work out in marriage what you couldn't and didn't work out when you were dating. So you find out, what do you want out of life? What are your priorities? What kind of person are you? Are we going in the same direction? You know, I've got all these feelings for you, but we're not a good match. We're just not a good match. Dating and marriage are both terrible places to try to change someone. Ladies, if you want to change a male, you need to go to the preschool department and sign up to help, okay? That's the closest you're going to get. You're not going to change him. And when you try to change him, he's going to start feeling like you're acting like his mother, and it isn't going to go well, and it isn't going to end well. You date to discover. That's the only reason you date. I'm discovering. Is this the kind of person that I'm looking for? The discovery process will be a lot clearer if you'll keep your lips and hands off of each other. Because as soon as you start putting your lips and hands on each other, you start losing IQ points. Now you start feeling stuff. You get emotionally hooked and you get mentally blinded. And now you're with somebody that if you weren't physically involved with them, you wouldn't be in the relationship anymore. But now you can't talk yourself into getting out. You gave up your virginity to them, or you messed around with them. And so now you think you're supposed to go on to marriage with that or something. No. Most people date far too much with their, quote, hearts, their feelings, and way too little with their heads, their brains. Infatuation is blind. Love is wide-eyed. The idea of following your heart works out nice in fantasy television, but it almost never does in the real world. Jeremiah 17:9 says, the heart's more deceitful than all else and is desperately sick. Who can understand it? Your heart will deceive you. In fact, all of us are capable of deceiving others. We're all masters at deceiving ourselves. We're all masters. Everybody can see the truth but us. Everybody knows we ought to get out but us. I put two great warnings about infatuation in your outline. First one, it's not enough to love the best part of someone. You must be able to live with the worst part about that person. It's not enough to love the best part of someone. Oh, he's so good looking. He's got money. He's funny. Whatever it is. You must be able to live with the worst part about that person. And don't marry until you've discovered the downside. You got to discover the downside. See, there's only a few exceptions to people with downsides. The only three people who don't have downsides are me, you, and whoever you're attracted to. None of them have downsides. Okay, you know I'm being facetious. Everybody's got a downside. You better know what it is. Because what you love most about them won't be enough when their downside's driving you up a wall or hurting you. Won't be enough. Now, here's another. When I'm committed to a certain outcome, I become unable to see the truth about that situation or person. When I'm committed to a certain outcome, I want to be in love, I want to be married. I become unable to see the truth about that situation or person. I'm going to say almost because you're not supposed to say always, but it probably is always. Almost every time anybody's gotten a divorce, the reason they got divorced was apparent in dating. They just did not want to see it. Other people saw it. They could have seen it, but no, they're in love. They want the dress. They want the wedding. They won't be queen for a day. The guy wants a honeymoon. And so these red flags are flying up. He's this, he's this, she's that, she's nuts. If you rescue a damsel in distress, you know what you end up with? A distressed damsel. She might make you feel real good being the hero and her protector and everything when you're dating, but it'll smother you in a marriage. And girls, you can't fix him. Don't marry a fixer-upper. Well, once he falls under my power of love, he'll become like Jesus Christ himself. No. He'll be who he is, and you won't like him. And he showed you who he was, but you ignored it. What you're committed to is discovery. Not this relationship going somewhere. Discovery. And as soon as you get to the point, like I did with these were good girls, you know, it's a great girl. But she's not going where I'm going spiritually without me. End of relationship. Start looking for the next one. You need to be committed to discovery, not making the relationship work. Listen real closely if you're single. In dating, you never work to make the relationship work. If it's not working, if it isn't working, it isn't working. This makes sense? The rules you apply to marriage, we're having problems. We got to work this out. Do not apply to dating. We got problems. I need to get out. If it's not working, it's not working. Remember, you're dating. You're on your very best behavior. If you can't get along on your very best behavior, how are you going to do when you're tired and grumpy and hungry and mad about something at work? It ain't gonna be pretty. Seemingly manageable problems and differences in dating become unmanageable problems and unmanageable difference in marriage. Marriage doesn't fix differences and people. It exposes them. It exposes them. You should never try to make dating work. You should allow God to show you that it isn't. This is working. And let me tell you this. I'll say it later in this series. Be careful about somebody who's got a lot of problems. Because if you're a good person, you have a good heart, you'll feel sorry for them. And if they're the opposite sex and attractive, you'll feel like it's love. There's a girl that back in high school, and her dad didn't just divorce the mom. He's disappeared. So there's no child support or anything. She grew up poor like I did. She's a pretty girl and funny. And so I kind of, you know, I started liking her, and we were kind of dating. And then I realized one day that what I had for her was really pity. I wanted to rescue her. You don't marry somebody because you want to rescue them. Have another friend who was in the ministry, went in the ministry before I did, and he married this girl. I was in the wedding. At the wedding, Black Oak Ridge Baptist Church in Hoss, at the wedding, before the wedding, I told him, don't do this. This girl had been abused by a wicked stepdad, and he was rescuing her. Didn't work. Eventually, he couldn't fix all that was broken in her, and she had an affair and left him. You never marry a fixer-upper. You never try to make dating work. What you want is for God to show you this isn't working. You may be a good person. I may be a good person, like the girls I dated, but this wasn't working like I thought it should work. Wasn't going where I wanted to go. That person wasn't the person I wanted to spend the rest of my life with. Look at Ecclesiastes 3:14. Everything God does remains forever. Everything God does remains forever. Listen closely. What we do doesn't. So when you get married, you want to get married because of what God's done in your heart, not because of what you've done in each other's arms. That's why you need to keep the hands and lips to yourself. I've never even kissed this girl, and I'm crazy about her. She's everything I think I want in a person to be my wife and to be the mother of my children. But if I get all physically involved, all my hormones get crazy, I feel like I'm crazy in love, I may be in love with a nut. And I marry her. And sure enough, eventually, it doesn't work out. Only happens, 60% of the time in America now? Everybody who ever got married thought theirs was the greatest love ever. Right? Oh, we were so infatuated. We were so goo-goo. Nobody ever loved like we love. Poor old Romeo and Juliet and Running Bear and what was the girl across the river from her anyway. They never knew love like this. 7 years later, they popped out 2 or 3 kids and they divorced. Started red hot, ended ice cold. Now, some of you may be thinking, I'm afraid to get married. You're smart. That's a good thing. You ought to proceed with the most extreme caution possible on planet Earth. Possible. Because there's all kinds of guys and girls who put on the mask and manipulate your emotions and hook you. But one day you will not be able to live with them. Never want a person more than you want to be in God's will. God's will has a great ending. But what we do is we go after what we want, and then we do it, and then later on we blame God for it. I can't believe God let me marry her. Well, 80 people told you not to. It's not God's fault. Dating should be an investigation. It should be, and it should be a thorough one. Infatuation, what's this? Infatuation is a leap into the darkness of what you don't know. Love is a leap into the light of what you do know. Completely different. See, a lot of people are getting married because they don't know this person yet. You need to be getting married because you do, and you like what you know. Now, let's look briefly at how romantic love works. Number one, we charm with things said. Okay, remember, we've got infatuation ignited. We've got the imaginations running. Now we're doing an investigation. So how do we turn infatuation into real love? Well, one, we charm with things said. We have chemistry with a person, feel infatuated. Then we build on that by being thoughtful, being kind, being charming. You can read the entire passages later, but look at Song of Solomon 4, verse 1. 1 to 7 is the entire passage. How beautiful you are, my darling, saying sweet things to each other. Song of Solomon 5, 10 to 16, verse 16, his mouth is full of sweetness. This is my beloved, O daughters of Jerusalem. People are favorably inclined and attracted to people who say nice things to them and about them to others. Say that again. People are favorably inclined toward and attracted to people who say nice things about them or to them and about them to others. We charm with things said. Number two, we captivate through things done. We captivate through things done. Betsy likes buttercups, kind of about her favorite flower. And I would go by and there'd be some buttercups going on the road. So I'd go grab them, take her buttercups. I was just forever thinking about what would make her happy today. I've been doing it now for 44 years. So we captivate through things done. We're also favorably inclined toward and attracted to people who do nice things for us. In fact, the people, not counting your kids, who you love the most are the people who do the most for you. It's really simple. It's really simple. In Song of Solomon 1:7, the girl talks about houses, plural, that Solomon built for them. In verse chapter 4, verse 8, he talks about taking, they talk about him taking her on a trip. In chapter 7, 11 to 12, it tells us that they took trips and did things together. They're traveling. Galatians 6:7 reminds us that we reap what we sow. We captivate through things done. We grow infatuation into love by the charming things we say and the captivating things we do for each other. Now, here's the third one. This is almost never talked about, and it's probably the most important thing I'll say to you this morning if you're married. Number three, we communicate with clear words. Clear words. Not memes, clear words. Communication is the art of speaking to each other. We've got a generation of kids growing up communication challenged because they communicate text to text rather than face to face and mouth to ear. They're communication challenged. We've got grown men. I've read a bunch of articles about this. They graduated law school. They're going to interview for a job in a law firm, and their mothers come to the interview with them. Real. This is true. Happens a lot. Not just one instance. Happens a lot. You got people who've never been taught how to be adequate human beings. They don't know how to communicate. Now, men and women are significantly different. The physical difference is the least difference between the two. Not the most, it's the least. And because of our personalities, backgrounds, and experiences, no two men or no two women are the same. So you say, well, I know what men are like, but you don't know what that man's like. Because you don't know what he's been through. You don't know how he processed it. You don't know how he felt about it, how he feels about himself now, and therefore how he's going to relate to you in the long term. to communicate the problem, to complicate the problem further, none of us can read minds. You say, what does she want? Well, I don't know, but she wants it real bad. What's he want? So what's the solution to this problem? Communication. Try it. You'll like it. How will I know what you want if you don't tell me what you want? I can't read your mind. You can't read my mind. And there are people sitting here who've been married for decades who want things they've never told their spouse they wanted. We're still waiting for them to wake up one day and go, hey, I know what you want now. And to guess and figure it out. No, ain't gonna happen. How will I know how to love you if you don't tell me how to best love you? Here's a great exercise. You write down, there's two columns. One, you both of you do one. You write down, these are the things I do to say I love you. These are the things you do that make me feel loved. And then you go on a date and talk about that all night. And then you probably want to add, these are some things I wished you did that would make me feel loved. Communication. Wow, who'd have thought about it? Who'd ever thunk it? In this next verse, she tells him how she likes to be held. Song of Solomon 2:6, let his hand be under my head and his right hand embrace me. Well, he probably had his right hand under her head and his left arm embracing her, and she didn't like it. But you know what most women would have done? They'd just been unhappy about it. But they're not going to tell him. He ought to know. I got news for you, ma'am. He don't. I know which doesn't. He doesn't. Well, she ought to know what I want. Maybe she doesn't. Unless you married a psychic. If you did, we won't withdraw your membership. That's another story, but anyway. There are a lot of people who don't know what they want. They only know what they don't like. In fact, I think the majority of people like that. They don't know what they want. But when you do what they don't like, they know they don't like it. Pleasing those people is a painful process of trial and error. But every one of you ought to know, this is what I want. And this is what I don't want you to do. It ought to be real simple. And then you tell your mate what you want and what you don't want. Don't miss what I'm about to say to you. I'll say it twice. True love is not the ability to figure out what the other person wants. It's the willingness to do what they want when you understand what that is. Well, if he loved me, he'd figure it out. It has nothing to do with him loving you. I'll tell you what, if you told him and he did it, you'd know he loved him. What's more loving? Some guy who's learned how to be a Casanova Romeo, who can swoon a girl, manipulate her emotions and sweep her off her feet? Or a good old boy who'd die for you and do anything for you that you told him you wanted? This guy's just doing what comes natural or what he's learned. What he's doing may have nothing to do with love. He probably just using you to take advantage of you. There's this other guy, you just tell him what he wants. You want the moon? He'll try to get it for you. That's the kind of guy you want to be married to. Whatever you want, he'll try to give it to you. If he can, he will. True love's not the ability to figure out what the other person wants. None of us can do that. It's the willingness to do what they want when you understand what that is. If they understand what you want and they don't give it to you, you got a problem. You picked poorly. Someone's going to say, well, you're just doing this because I told you to. That's what women do. No, I'm doing this because I love you and now I know what you want. That's love. If you're going to have real love, you got to give up this fantasy of what it's supposed to look like and feel like and all the magic that's supposed to happen. Like reading people's minds. If you want real love, you got to get in reality. Most couples leave the other person guessing and then get mad when they don't get what they want. Tell your mate what you want and what you don't want. Knowing and doing what both of you want will keep the flame going. Another John Lennon song describes the important part of this important part of romantic love. It's entitled Love. Love is real. Real is love. Love is feeling. Feeling love. Nothing wrong with that. Love is asking to be loved. Honey, I've had a horrible day. I need you to love me real good tonight. Asking to be loved. Most people never do that. They come home and stomp around the house, and then they get mad if their wife didn't figure it out and fix it, or their husband didn't figure it out and fix it, instead of communicating. I'm in a really dark place right now. I need you to love me well. Love is touch. Touch is love. Love is reaching. Reaching love. Love is asking to be loved. Love is you, you and me. Love is knowing we can be. Love is free, free is love. Love is living, living love. Love is needing to be loved. Clear communication. The two of you only have to do two things to have a great marriage. It's really simple. You need to tell each other what you want and don't want, and then both of you need to do it. That's all you got to know about having a great marriage. She wants this. I do a lot of it. She doesn't want that. I never do it. But you know what marriage does? Marriage is a full mirror, full-length mirror, in which for the first time in our lives, we see ourselves. And we find out how broken and selfish and petty and controlling, and I could use a whole lot of other words, we are. We never knew we were that in dating. But now in marriage, we see ourselves, and usually it's not real pretty. Learn what your mate wants and do it. Stop doing what they don't want. It's simple. Closing thoughts, number one. Our hearts long for more than romantic love can give us. Our hearts long for more than romantic love can give us. Look at these verses. Proverbs 27:20, nor are the eyes of man ever satisfied. Ecclesiastes 5:10, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with his income. So watch this. What you love won't be able to do it for you. Because of the holes in our souls, we have an insatiable desire for more, for better, for something else, for the next thing. We set our sight and hearts on what satisfies for a while, but then it leaks. Eventually, the job, the house, the car, the vacations, the alcohol, the drugs, the porn, the food, the nice stuff, the money, the person. Eventually, they no longer do it for us. There's a hole in your soul that only God Himself can fill. Filling that hole is a lot more, requires a lot more than just going to church. It requires complete surrender. It requires living in the Word. It requires applying the Word, which includes understanding God's truth that can set you free and heal you from your brokenness. You long for a love that only a right relationship with God can give you. And even if you do all the above, it's not going to get completely fixed till heaven. You can progressively get better, but you won't be completely whole, healed, and well until you're with Jesus. Listen closely. If you understand that, you can enjoy the relationships you have. Why? Because I'm not expecting more of them than they can give me or they're supposed to give me. But if I don't understand that, then I poison the relationship because they're not doing it for me. And now I'm disappointed because they're not giving me something that I need so desperately, empty cup, that they can't give me. And frankly, they're not even supposed to give me. I'm supposed to get that from God. If you don't understand this, you'll keep going from relationship to relationship, looking for life in others, only to eventually be disappointed with all of them. It's kind of like this. On a scale of 1 to 10, if I can be content with 2 and I get a 6, I am a happy, happy boy. But if I can't be content unless I have an 8, I can have a 7 and I'm miserable. You see the difference? It's about my expectation. When I quit expecting you to do for me what only God can do for me, then what you do for me can be enough for this relationship. But if I expect you to do for me what you can't do for me, you're not even supposed to do for me, you will never be enough. And therefore, in my mind, this relationship will never be enough. Sidebar, before I give you this last point. There are rules that, for marriage that don't apply to dating. I said this a little bit earlier. If it be, you know, in dating, if it begins to be work, get out. Why? Because you're both on your very best behavior. If it's not working in that situation, it's not going to work when you come off your best behavior, which you will eventually. In marriage, it will be work. You're two different people. You're two broken sinners. There will be work to do, but you do everything in your power to work through it. You don't do that in dating, but you do it in marriage, especially if you have children. Now, the last point is for those of us who are already married. Number two, if we can't learn to love the one we're with, it's unlikely we will love the one we want to be with. If we can't love the one we're with, it's unlikely we'll love the one we want to be with. As you've seen today, when somebody talks about, quote, falling in love, what they're really talking about is being infatuated with someone. You don't fall into love. Love gets developed. Infatuation, again, is a strong and often foolish and unreasonable attraction to another person. Love, on the other hand, is a deep affection for a person, not a powerful attraction. That requires a deep affection requires knowledge and time. You learn to love. It does begin with a spark, but then you got to do something with spark. 4 weeks ago, we saw that Solomon had it all. Listen closely. This is kind of the turn at the end of the story. He had it all. It all included over 1,000 women. Literally every woman he wanted, he had. None of it filled the hole in his soul. It all, are you listening? Included this girl. It all included this girl 30 years earlier. He was romantically bananas over her, but turned out it was infatuation, never developed into real love. What was once red hot eventually became just something else that didn't do it for him. 30 years later, everything, including her, failed to quench the empty feeling in his soul. So Solomon tells us in Ecclesiastes 9:9, enjoy life with the woman whom you love all the days of your fleeting life, which is given to you under the sun. What he's saying is learn to love the one you loved first. Proverbs 5:18, rejoice in the wife of your youth. He's telling us that if you don't learn contentment with who you're with, watch this, you can go 1,000 deep and still be empty. 1,000 deep. Romantic love is a wonderful gift from God, but you got to be less impressed with infatuation and attraction and be more committed to building a deep affection. But even when you do it well with the right person, romantic love will not be enough. Find your life in the God you were made for and by, in the only one who can give you life, which is Jesus. If you do, you'll discover that when you're enough yourself, then that person can be enough, maybe even more than enough. But if you don't find your life in Him, eventually, one day, that person won't be enough.
The world paints a picture of romance that often leads to disappointment, but God's Word reveals what real love looks like. Want a love that stands the test of time? It starts with a heart rooted in Him. If you're an East Tennessee native who watches Saturday morning TV, we're happy to let you know that Coryton Church and Dr. Rocky Ramsey have a Saturday morning TV program on our local CBS stations. The hour-long program airs at 9 a.m. every Saturday on MyVLT. So join us this Saturday and look up MyVLT on your TV guides.